Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Captain Serrano, Sweet Delight.
Station Tug 34, permission to grapple.
Permission to grapple.
All fast, on your signal.
Captain Serrano of Sweet Delight, permission to undock on your signal.
All clear on station. Confirm all clear aboard.
All clear aboard.
Graphic Audio presents The Serrano Legacy by Elizabeth Moon. Book 3, Winning Colors, Part 2. Narrated by Nanette Savard. With performances by Colleen Delaney, Lily Beacon, Michael Glenn, Corey James, Terrence Aselford, Andy Clements, Sonny Lasky, David Coyne, Tess Rowan, Stephen Carpenter, Richard Rowan, Elliot Dash, Eric Messner, Ken Jackson, James Konacek, Elizabeth Demery, James Lewis, Dylan Lynch, Michael John Casey, Faith Potts, Thomas Penny, Johan Detweiler, MB Van Dorn, Nathaniel Perry, and Mort Shelby.
Hitchcock will never qualify as one of the beauties of the Empire.
Rafa watched the dull gray-green brush slide past the windows of the commuter train from the shuttle port. Vagaries of geology and terraforming had resulted in low-relief land masses and a monotonous climate. Irrigation freshened the vast fields of staple grains and root crops that fed the planet's workforce. But beyond the fields, whose bright greens and yellows seemed almost garish, the vegetation consisted of many varieties of thorny scrub between 3 and 6 meters high. When the wind blew, which it usually did, the sky hazed with grit. When it rained, erosion scoured the thin, loose soil into twisting arroyos. The train racketed across a bridge over one of these, and Rafa noticed a pile of construction waste that looked as if someone had thought of damming the dry watercourse. It hadn't worked. A deeper channel cut around one end of the pile. Twoville, almost as dull as its name, was a low-built, compact city on the coast itself. Rafa had arranged rooms at the one real hotel. Ronnie and George would share a room in a hostel for transient workers. They were in the car behind her, carefully separate. When she reached the hotel address, she was startled to find herself facing a small one-story cube with a single solid door.
Is that the hotel?
Inside, she realized she was at the top of a well, looking down into the hotel. Across the gap, a waterfall poured over a tiled edge to fall. She felt dizzy when she looked over the edge.
It takes most newcomers that way.
She looked around to see a respectable-looking older man in business clothes.
Especially if they don't know anything about how Patchcock was built. I'll bet you thought this was a mighty small hotel.
Well, yes.
Patchcock's mostly underground. There's not much scenery topside or a climate to brag about and fierce storms off the ocean. Everything's dug in, just shafts and warehouses on the surface.
But aren't you too close to the ocean? Doesn't it seep in?
Well, flood would be more like it. Except that there's a Teigman field generator holding a barrier on it.
This meant little to Rafa, who had no idea what a Teigman field generator was. She did have a clear memory of the perpetually damp sublevels in a seaside resort, resulting from percolation of seawater through porous soil. Patchcock soil certainly looked porous. She wished the building had windows to the outside. She wanted to know exactly how far below the water they would be. Her nervousness must have shown.
It's quite safe, I assure you. The Teigman field is absolutely impermeable. and the field shape has been designed to enclose all the sublevels.
It must take a lot of energy.
Not once it's on. Starting it up now, that took half a Patchcock year and every bit of power they could find. But it's stable once it's on and locked.
The doorman arrived, with her luggage on a trolley.
Excuse me, madam. Would you prefer to glide down or take the lift?
The lift.
The lift would have comforting walls and doors. The hotel registration desk also seemed ordinary, as long as she could pretend it was on ground level, and the great open shaft with the waterfall went that far up in the air. Her rooms opened onto a private terrace, lush with flowering plants. Between the thick vines and bushes, she caught glimpses of what looked like distant green meadows under a twilight sky. Concealed lights produced the illusion of sunlight, shifting with the hours, on her terrace. If not for the evacuation procedures display on the reverse of the door, with the critical data highlighted in red, she'd never have suspected that she was 27 meters below mean sea level, far out of sight of Patchcock's real sky and sun. It was perfectly dry, with no smell of the sea. She felt the carpet surreptitiously, no hint of dampness. It didn't really make her feel safe. That it was dry now didn't mean it would stay dry. She looked around at her small domain. A bedroom and sitting room, both opening onto the terrace, and a large bathroom with every variety of plumbing she'd encountered before. Handsome furniture, fresh flowers, a cooler stocked with a dozen or so bottles and cans. She recognized only a few of the brands. Amazing what money could do. She would not have guessed that Patchcock had such amenities. Then she noticed the table lamp. Puce and turquoise, with an uneven streak of mustard yellow down one side, as ugly as any of Venezia's pots. Rafa eyed it suspiciously. It might have been a pot once. So might the bedside lamp. Garish pink, splotched with a fungus-like pattern of blue-gray. So, was this what happened to Venezia's output? She wondered how many other places in Touville had been given the dubious honor of showing off Otala's aunt's presumed talent. She flicked on the comm console. Again, the emergency procedures, this time requiring her to thumb-sign an affidavit that she had read and understood them. She glanced over to the open closet, making sure that a pea suit hung there as advertised. Then a string of advertisements for local tour guides and recreational facilities. None looked inviting. What she needed was a business directory. There, on the menu after the obligatory tourist advertisements, the list of businesses by type. Vertical integration seemed to be the guiding philosophy here, of industry as well as architecture. Her experience in her aunt's affairs helped her recognize the components of a complete pharmaceutical industry. Raw materials used to manufacture unit and bulk packaging, labeling, and all the rest. The manufacturing stages for everything from intravenous solution bottles to the foam that cushioned the final shipping containers. By the time she called the numbers she thought most likely, she felt she would understand whatever they might say.
Your who?
Rafa repeated what she had begun to think of as pedigree and show experience. Her family name, her sept, her aunt's authorization to act as her agent. She rather hoped Aunt Marta didn't ever know how far her authorization had been stretched.
I went to school with Otala Moreline.
Surely it couldn't hurt to claim, honestly. Acquaintance with a daughter of the CEO of the company that owned Patchcock.
You what?
Rafa frowned. While she doubted that Otala's friends visited here frequently, surely being a friend wouldn't create that level of upset.
We went to school together.
Ah, I see. Well, I suppose there's a tour we give visiting, executives. You'd have to present your credentials.
Oh, that's all right. I suppose you're often annoyed by people impersonating Otala's school friends.
Rafa had met the bright young man assigned as her tour guide in the corporate branch office. Now they were descending into the bowels of a factory.
But there are lots of kinds of pharmaceuticals, aren't there?
That sounded really stupid. She wasn't surprised that her guide gave her a sharp look.
I mean, I know there are antibiotics, antivirals, neuroleptics, contraceptives, but the other companies my aunt invested in usually stick to one or two chemical classes. Vertical integration, she says, is very important, from the substrate to the finished product, so pharmaceuticals seemed Vague.
I can't discuss specific processes, you understand.
Of course. But in general?
Naminopyramidolithophosphergic acid.
Rafa suspected at least some of that string of syllables was faked. None of it sounded like the quick course she had from the Guernesi.
Oh, I see. I guess that's what I'll tell Aunt Marta, though I never heard of that before.
Your aunt's planning to invest?
Didn't they tell you from the head office? I explained that's why they sent me on this tour.
But this is a family business. The Moralines...
Apparently, some family members died, and she thought of picking up anything that might be on the market.
Died? Who died?
I don't know. The Moralines are a large family. Surely someone's died recently. Probably a distant cousin or something. Aunt Marta didn't say. She just sent me here to look into things.
That, with a bright smile that was supposed to disarm suspicion, but her guide looked away, tension in every line of face and neck. The more Harris worked with the local government of Xavier, the more she knew about local resources, the more threatening the situation appeared. The mining colonies, most of them concentrated on the second largest satellite of the larger gas giant Zalbod, had no defenses at all. Rockhounds, miners who worked the smaller chunks of debris, used little 2-6-person pods for transportation. Nothing could be mounted on them which would affect a ship with shields. There was one antiquated ore hauler, large enough to mount both screens and weapons, if they had had screens and weapons to mount, or if it had had enough power plant to do more than crawl slowly from one orbital base to another.
We have to hope someone's listening back at Sector HQ.
Harris could hope it, but she also knew from experience how civilian reports of trouble could end up at the bottom of someone's stack. She didn't have the current override codes that might have bumped their report up.
Where's Lady Cecilia?
Another horse farm, of course. I have no idea how it can take so long to pick out what she wants, particularly since there are genetic surgeons who specialize in equine design. She told me that. But now she's visiting somebody she calls Marcia and Poots, which sounds faintly obscene. She says she expects to be there several weeks, and I'm not to worry. Then she sent all these pictures, and they're just horses. Here we are in real danger, and she's worrying about whether this one's hocks or wiggly. I love the woman, but really...
Captain?
Harris leapt up.
Coming now.
When she arrived, all the ex-military crew were clustered there, around Kutsudis' screen. They moved over so that she could see.
It's ours.
Kutsudis didn't have to say it. Harris recognized the drive signature herself. She had commanded just such a cruiser.
And another.
That, too, was familiar. Although cruisers patrolled alone, this would not be a routine patrol. She expected three, cruiser and two patrol ships, and the final signature appeared even as she thought it. A ragged shift out of jump, or appropriate caution, depending on how much trouble the commander had expected to find.
Find out who's commanding when you can. I'll let the Xavierans know.
She turned to her own board and tapped in the code. They'd be relieved to know that the fleet had finally listened, that help had arrived, that their survival didn't depend on one armed yacht and its ex-military captain. And if they weren't relieved enough, she herself was. Those had been anxious days, wondering who would get here first. She knew her limits, even after roses and bagpipe parades.
Captain, it's Commander Garavay.
Kutsudis' expression, which Harris was learning to read, gave some signal she couldn't yet decode. She tried to remember a Garavay and couldn't dredge up anything but the vague impression of the name on a promotion list years back. Maybe the first name would mean something.
Which Garavay?
Deccan Garavay. Captain Levati had, served on the same ship with him when they were both jigs, sir.
Harris gave Kutsudis a long stare, intended to remind him that she was now his captain, and this was no time to withhold loyalty.
Right, Captain Serrano. Deccan Garavay, in the opinion of Captain Levati, would require divine intervention to achieve the moral stature of a child rapist.
Even for Arash, that's strong.
More importantly, while Arash had colorful opinions of many officers, he didn't usually, to Harris's knowledge, share them with his enlisted crew.
It wasn't just that once, either. Captain Levati didn't say much about the details of that cruise, but Garavay was in the same battle group we were during that mess on Patchcock. Son of a bitch blew the second reactor station after the ceasefire. and it was only because the rebels came back with heavy stuff that he got away with it. Nobody noticed because they knocked out the command ship, and they had the score.
But you had your own PET scans?
This was something that hadn't made it into the briefings.
Yes, I did. And Captain Levati wanted to make something big of it, but the scan data were tricky. I just figured out how to boost the definition, and it was non-standard. And he wasn't commanding then, of course. He wasn't sure how his captain would take it.
I don't suppose you know where Garavay has been stationed lately.
Harris watched the incoming scan data, but let her mind roll fantasy dice. The probability of a bad captain being in command of a strike group here at such a time, the probability that she and Kutsudis would be here to notice.
Levati suspected this, didn't he?
She didn't look at Kutsudis, but made a private bet on whether he would answer, and if so, in what order. He wasn't looking at her, either. Out of her peripheral vision, she saw his profile, intent on the displays in front of him.
He thought something would blow, yes. It's true that I was in some danger. My modifications of scan technology had become a bit too famous. But he said you were the lightning rod and you'd need some help. Unobtrusive help. I don't think he thought about Garavay in particular. Garavay was attached to the Third Ward, Inner Systems.
Third Ward Inner, where Lupescu had been for 8 years before taking over the combat position that had cost Harris her commission. Harris had the prickling feeling all down her back that usually preceded battle.
I am a lightning rod?
Serrano's in general, he said. And you in particular. Your aunt, the Admiral, told him—
My aunt? What was she talking to Arash for? Damn it!
Her vision blurred a moment. Then she felt the long habit of control settling back into her mind like a rider on a fractious horse. She glanced around the bridge. None of her crew were staring. They knew better. Kutsudis met her eye for a moment, as if checking to see if she was about to hit him, then looked away.
Never mind. I have never been able to predict Aunt Vida. Sorry, Esteban. If you have any aunts, you'll understand.
My aunt Estrelita. Actually a great aunt on my mother's side. She's not in fleet, or she'd drive me crazy. Every time I'm on home leave, she's prompting an alliance with yet another second or third cousin twice removed. She runs the whole family except for my cousin Jewel, who's just as pig-headed as she is.
Harris wondered if he really had an aunt like that, or if he just made her up on the spot. Didn't really matter. What did matter was that someone, Levati or her aunt or both, had expected her to be in trouble and had provided Kutsudis, presumably, to help her out.
Or get rid of me.
She shoved that dark thought back. No time to worry about that. Instead, she could worry about the choice of Garavay for such duty as this. Her worry translated into a discreet request to be included in the invitation to senior administrative personnel to meet the new military commander of Xavier's defense. That amounted to a reception and meeting to follow on the orbital station. Harris, who had met all but Garavay before, mingled easily and worked her way to the back of the group.
Commodore Garavay, commanding the battle group sent in response to your call for help.
Harris did not let her eyebrows rise at that, but wondered why he was trying to impress. True, Commodore was the correct term for someone commanding a battle group, but a battle group was defined as a formation comprising at least two heavy cruisers. Commonly, battle groups had two heavy cruisers, a light cruiser, and 3 to 5 patrol ships. One cruiser and a couple of patrol ships could be a battle group only if you'd just lost the others in combat. Garavay had a strong boned face well padded with flesh. She noticed that his gaze locked on the person to whom he spoke, a fervent intensity that, in other people, she had found to accompany both the ability and willingness to lie convincingly. Still, his first questions to the General Secretary were reasonable, as he asked for clarification of the message that had brought him and the raiders' attack. He listened to the somewhat rambling report the General Secretary's aide gave. Harris winced at some of the inaccuracies which Garavay patiently dissected, and then commended the Xavierans on their successful response.
Captain Serrano helped us out when the raider attacked.
Serrano? Harris Serrano? You were lucky.
The emphasis could be taken either way. Harris waited to see how he would shade it. He still did not look at her, as if he had not noticed her among the others.
I never had the honor of serving in the same organization with Captain Serrano, but I believe she had a distinguished record.
His gaze raked the assembly and snagged only briefly on hers before passing on. So he did recognize her, and had no intention of acknowledging her at this meeting.
She blew that raider neatly enough.
I dare say. From what you've said, a cobbled-up mismatch of weaponry and hull. Not much threat, really. Though I understand you're being anxious for the station. Even a gap-toothed wolf can bite.
Harris blinked. They weren't going to like that. Neither the words nor the tone. Not after the previous raids they'd suffered. And where had he heard about the raider's design flaws? She didn't think her crew had gossiped about that among the stationers, though she'd ask before making the obvious connection.
I hardly think a radar capable of blowing our main station out of the sky could be called a gap-toothed wolf, Commodore.
The General Secretary glanced around for support and got it in the expressions of others.
Those raiders have been at us for a decade, during which no one from the RSS has seen fit.
But it didn't blow your station, did it? Not this time nor any other. So why do you think it could? Because Captain Serrano told you so?
Harris could feel the stubbornness, as if it were a visible pall hanging smog-like over their heads. Surely Garavay knew how they'd react. Why would he want them to react like this, stiffening into dislike of him? With a war looming, he should be doing what he could to rally the civilians behind him. Perhaps he was one of those officers who thought civilians were all fools, good only for providing the money to keep the fleet going. Perhaps he assumed that if he dismissed their fear of the raider, they would then believe him when he told them something else was a threat. Whatever his intent, she knew it was a mistake. When the meeting broke up, he made a point of coming to her side.
Well, Captain Serrano, I never had the pleasure of meeting you before.
This close, the strong face with its bright green eyes had a raffish charm.
My misfortune, I must say. Of course, I heard. Your family is branches everywhere, it seems.
Harris decided there was no advantage to be gained by pretense.
Isn't calling one cruiser and two patrols a battle group a bit much?
His eyes widened a moment, then narrowed as he grinned, squeezing the light from their green until they looked almost black.
Surely you don't feel an obligation to explain. I thought it would reassure the locals and convince them they weren't forgotten. It's not likely to be anything much here. Certainly nothing to justify a real battle group. And if this satisfies them, well...
Harris shrugged as if she didn't care and glanced around the compartment.
I merely commented. If there were veterans here, for instance, they might say something.
Barring you, I don't expect to find any veterans. Xavier apparently sent few recruits to the fleet. And those old enough to retire chose more populous worlds. Not that I blame them.
It's not a bad place.
Harris found it more than interesting that he had bothered to check on Xavier's recruitment to fleet and where its veterans went.
You think not? I hate ag worlds myself. Dirty. Backward. Half of them free birthers whose discontented spawns scrabble for a way-off planet and clog the ranks of unskilled labor hanging around spaceports. I'd like to eat as much as anyone, but we could subsist quite well without them.
His venom surprised her. She wondered what had given him a dislike for ag worlds. Had he come from one?
It has strategic importance, at least.
If the Black Scratch is crazy enough to attack through here, I'm not going to be able to stop them. Surely you don't think they will. It'd be a very inefficient approach.
There's the spinner jump point.
That? Fleet's got a couple of battle groups on the other side. Black Scratch can't take it. They must know that.
Harris opened her mouth to protest this obvious idiocy and stopped.
I suppose. They used to have just a single cruiser.
Ah, no wonder you're worried. Of course, you wouldn't know the current dispositions.
So you're just here to show the flag, as it were?
He grinned at her. He had a good grin, one she might have liked if she hadn't known all the rest.
Something like that. Perhaps snag another raider? By the way, I didn't mean to slight your accomplishment in there. Going after a raider, even a shoddy thing like that, with a rich lady's yacht, took guts. And you couldn't know how incompetent the raider was until afterwards.
No. To tell you the truth, I was more than half expecting to be blown away myself. The only advantage of being small is that you're hard to detect in the first place and hard to hit in the second.
Lucky for you, the raider had no decent weaponry. Did he even get off one shot?
A couple, but inaccurate, as you say, he had no decent weaponry. He just looked dangerous.
And these poor sods have been paying tribute to that sort of trash. Well, I can take care of that. Tell me, how long do you plan to be in the system?
Paris frowned as if it bothered her.
I don't know. Lady Cecilia is visiting bloodstock farms. I think she expects to find the perfect horse genes somewhere and go back into eventing.
And you have to hang around until your owner is through? Lucky you. It's almost like being back in the fleet, isn't it? Hanging around, waiting on someone else's bright ideas. Of course, your owner's a rejuvenant. She has plenty of time.
Interesting. He didn't know she owned the ship herself. It wouldn't have been big news, not with everything else going on, but he might have picked it out of the data net if he'd looked for it. Would she, in his place? Of course. On the other hand, never assume the enemy is stupid. Perhaps he was just sounding her out.
I suppose so. But so are many admirals, aren't they?
True enough. I don't suppose you could lend me your onboard weaponry. Beef up this old clunker they've got here. Use it as a decoy or something.
Sorry, it's not much, and you'd have to take the hull apart to get it out anyway. You can't imagine what it took to get it installed in the first place. Anyway, since Lady Cecilia paid for it, I suppose it's really hers. Of course, you could confiscate the whole ship if it's really an emergency.
Oh, no, nothing like that. Although if your employer is nervous, I would advise you to get her out of here.
I'll speak to her.
That pleased him. His eyelid flickered. He wanted her gone. He wanted her weapons gone. What was he up to? She itched to get back to Kutsudis and his scans. She was ready to throw roses all over her Aunt Admiral and even Arash Levadi. With any luck, and Kutsudis made his own, he would have the probes in place, and she would soon have an ear in this fellow's private councils.
Well, there's never been a suspicion of treason. Overzealousness, misinterpretation of orders allowing him more leeway, but nothing to harm the Familius.
Adding to the mess at Patchcock harmed the Familius. There's more than one way to cause trouble.
I hadn't thought of that.
Harris grinned to herself. She had begun to wonder if the man was a genius at everything.
We're one of the logical places for the benignity to strike. You're sure there was a watcher out there when we took that raider, and he called them the Black Scratch.
So? Everyone knows that nickname.
Everybody knows it, but think, Steban. Did you ever hear Arash use it during a briefing? I know I never did. It's slang, and this may be war.
Now that you mention it, no. Commander Levadi always said the benignity or the compassionate hand.
And Kutsudis, for the first time, referred to Levadi by his rank, not his position as captain. Interesting.
You think he's turned?
I think. Yes, I do. And I have no proof and no one to tell, not within any range that would help.
Does he know what you think?
No, he shouldn't. I played stupid for all I was worth. Accepted his judgment that the raider was almost harmless. He knew about the mismatched drive hull fit, too, which none of us told him.
That counts. He couldn't have found out about that any other way, unless it was in your report to Sector HQ.
No, it wasn't. They had no need, and I suppose I was looking for something like this. If this is what I think. It all boils down to data. His, ours, if any of it's trustworthy. How much of it's compromised. If he knows who you are, what you are, then we're in even worse trouble.
Harris was working her way through routine reports when Kutsudis called her to the bridge again.
Captain, you must hear this. It's what Garavay and his senior officers have said.
Harris touched the control. Amazing sound quality. She still wished she knew how Kutsudis did what he did.
It will work. That Serrano bitch doesn't know anything. She's negligible.
Serrano. Negligible?
Harris wanted to smash all Garavay's teeth down his fleshy throat. As they talked on, their plan appeared much as she had expected. The Benignity ships would arrive to find a blown station and helpless planet. Garavay would exit to another place to do much the same thing. Where else? Rotterdam. Rotterdam. Cecilia's friends, that lovely place she had wanted to revisit.
Not likely.
Kutsudis stared. Harris looked at the others.
We have to stop them.
Stop them? What? Garavay or the invasion?
Both, ideally. Garavay first, of course.
How? We couldn't breach his shield if we put everything we have into his flank sitting next to him in dock.
Actually, we might. Of course, his return would vaporize us and the station.
There's nothing in this system that can take Garavay's ships, except wits.
Wits? You're planning to trick him out of his ships? How? At the gambling table, perhaps?
No. I'm not going to gamble with his notions of honor. We will have to capture his ships, and since frontal assault won't do, it will take wits.
You're planning to walk onto his ships and just take over? Just say, please, Commodore, I think you're a traitor and I'm taking over?
Something like that.
And you expect him to agree?
I expect him to die. He's not going to surrender and risk court-martial, neither he nor his fellow captains. The only way to get those ships is by coup de main. And then great good luck in the Serrano name.
I was going to mention that most crews don't take kindly to someone murdering the captain and taking over. Just a thought.
You do realize the legal side of what you're doing?
Yes. I'm proposing treasonous piracy, if you look at it that way, and some people will. A civilian stealing not one but three RSS combat vessels in what will be a time of war.
You won't get all three. One, maybe. Two, if you're very lucky. Not all three.
That may be. I will certainly try to get all three, because if I don't, I may have to destroy one.
Harris had faced that in her mind. She could not leave a ship committed to helping the Benignity invasion to run loose in this system.
If you're wrong about any of it, you'll have no alternatives. If the Benignity doesn't invade through here, if Garavay is just a detestable bully, but not a traitor, if you're not able to get the ships...
Then I'm dead. I've thought of that. It means you're dead as well, which is bothersome.
Oh, it's not that, Captain. I, for one, wouldn't miss this for anything, and it's a novel way to die, after all. Trying to steal one of our own ships for a good cause. More fun than jumping that yacht out of near space.
If you try it and aren't killed, you'll be an outlaw. You can't stay in familiar space.
Harris stared at him. He did not look down.
Petrus, if you think I can't do it, say so. If you think I shouldn't do it, if you think I'm working with bad data or logic, say so. But trust that I can do elementary risk analysis, will you?
I know you can. But I also know how much you want to set foot on a cruiser bridge again. Have you factored that into your analysis?
Yes. Petrus, I do miss, have missed that command. You're right about that, and it is a factor. But I'm not about to risk our lives and the lives of everyone in this system, crews and landborne alike, to satisfy my whims. There's something I haven't shared with you.
Before anyone could comment, she flicked on the cube reader. She had already selected the passage. Her Aunt Vida's face, an older version of her own Serrano features, stared out at them.
I have complete confidence in your judgment. In any difficulty, you may depend upon my support for any action you find necessary to preserve the honor and safety of the Familius Regnant in these troubled times.
I don't think my Aunt Admiral anticipated pirating fleet warships, but it gives me a shred of legitimacy. And I intend to weave that into something more than a tissue of lies.
How? Not that I don't believe you, and not that I'm opposed, but how?
In the pause that followed, Harris tried to work out why Petrus was being so antagonistic.
What it really is, Captain, is that we never had a chance to be this close while you were planning before. We enjoyed the result, but we never got to see the process.
All right, Oblo, you're partly right. It still seems impossible to me that she's going to take over three warships all by herself. Well, we'll help, but it's not much. The pea shooters we have on this thing wouldn't hurt those ships. Then they'd blow us away before we could get a shot off anyway. There's no way to sneak aboard, and even if we could, I don't see how the four of us could seize control of the ship against resistance. She can't just stroll over and say, "Oh, by the way, Garavay, I'll be the new captain as of today."
The delay had given Harris time to come up with the outline of a plan.
Like this. You're half right, Petrus. We're going to walk in peacefully, invited guests.
They'll scan us for weapons.
What is the most dangerous weapon in the universe?
They all grinned and repeated the gesture with which generations of basic instructors had taunted their recruits.
That's right. What's between your ears can't be scanned, and you're all exceptional unarmed fighters.
So we stroll in for afternoon tea or whatever?
Properly meek and mild, yes.
Harris batted her eyelashes.
Begging the captain's pardon, but if you did that to me, I'd think you were having a seizure.
And then we jump Garavay and kill him? It's gonna take all of us, and what, no one's gonna notice?
Petrus, for a bloodthirsty pirate, you're being ridiculously cautious. No, we're going to walk into as many of the traders as we can find gathered with Garavay. Kutsudis' ongoing sound tap will help us there, and kill all of them. You notice that they like to gather and gab. Kutsudis has them on 3 separate occasions already. I'd like to take out all 3 ship captains, but I doubt we'll find them all together. 4 or 5 traitorous officers, though, will reduce the resistance we face. Admiral Serrano's reputation will do the rest. Or not, as the case may be.
Everyone knows you're not in fleet anymore.
Yes, officially. But suppose the whole thing was a feint? Suppose I'm on special assignment?
They stared at her, this time shocked into silence.
You're not, really, are you?
See? If you can think that, even for a moment, after what we've been through, then it can work.
Janice continued to stare at her with an expression blank of all emotion.
But seriously, you didn't resign because your aunt...
No! I resigned, stupidly, I now admit, for the reasons I told you and without hearing a word from my sainted aunt. But if she had intended something like this, no one would know. It is plausible, just with the Serrano reputation. And it's our chance. A slim one, but a chance.
I've seen fatter chances die of starvation. One thing about it, Harris, Captain, it's never dull shipping with Serranos.
So now for the details. It's tricky enough, so we'll have rehearsals, and hope we're not still rehearsing when the benignity arrives.
Cecilia felt a certain tension as she entered the stable office. Nothing she could put her finger on. Dear Marcia, smiling so amiably, and Poots, with an even more foolish grin. Slangsby, the head groom, with no grin at all, but something twinkling in the depth of his little blue eyes. Were they upset, perhaps, because she had visited 2 other breeding farms before coming here? They hadn't been that sensitive in years past.
Such a fortunate escape. We've heard all about it.
I'm surprised such a minor matter stayed on the news this far out. With the king's resignation...
Oh, as if you didn't have something to do with that.
Cecilia blinked, assessing the undercurrents.
I think perhaps my influence was considerably exaggerated. Of course, I was at the Grand Council meeting, but...
Marcia's smile vanished, replaced by her more usual expression, which had always reminded Cecilia of one of those toys with a spring-controlled lid that snapped tight.
Never mind, then, if you don't want to trust your oldest, dearest friends.
Marcia and Poots were so far from being old and dear friends that they made the phrase ridiculous. Yes, they were rich. Yes, they considered themselves the equal of anyone. She had known them for years, ridden with them, bought and sold horses in the same markets.
I suppose you're upset that we didn't come at once to help you. I'm sure we would have, except that we didn't even find out for months and months. And by then it seemed, and it was foaling time anyway, and it would have taken us months to get there, because as you know, we don't have a private yacht.
The explanation, like most explanations, simply dug a deeper and muckier hole in the claimed relationship. If they could know all about it so soon after the king's resignation, then they should have known about her collapse that soon, too. Foaling season was a weak excuse. No one would have expected them to load up a ship full of pregnant mares, and it had been years since Marcia attended foaling herself. As for don't have a private yacht, that was, strictly speaking, true. Their Fortune's Darling was well out of the yacht class, and might have served as the flagship of a small shipping company. In any case, Cecilia had not expected help from them, and wasn't, despite the clumsy excuses, upset that they hadn't provided it.
Never mind. All I'm really interested in is your bloodstock. Max said you still had some of that singularity sperm available?
What are you doing? Restocking the royal, excuse me, formerly royal, stables for yourself?
That was too much. Cecilia felt her neck get hot, and didn't really care what her face looked like.
Not at all. I am trying to do a favor for some friends who saved my life and assisted my recovery. Since you are, as you say, old and dear friends, I had hoped to purchase both sperm and time-locked embryos from you. However, it seems that other suppliers might be more convenient.
Marcia turned red. Poots, as usual, looked as if he might cry. Slangsby now had the grin the others had discarded.
I didn't. You don't have to take it that way.
Which way?
Cecilia decided she would let Marcia try to wriggle out of this. It might even be interesting, in a purely zoological way, to watch the wriggling.
Cecilia, my dear, you take everything so seriously. I was just teasing. Honestly, my dear, that rejuvenation seems to have affected your temper.
Cecilia let her eyebrows rise of themselves. Really?
All right, I'm sorry. If you want singularity genes, we've got them. Sperm and embryos both. I suppose you're thinking of the Buccinator line you favored so.
Buccinator had only been the most prepotent sire of the past 3 decades for performance horses. Minimal tweaking of the frozen sperm gave breeders options for speed on the flat or substance for jumping. Marcia had produced, after decades of work, one horse not more than 15% worse than Buccinator. Singularity sperm would offer genetic diversity, but she intended to have top equine geneticists do some editing before she turned it over to her friends.
Perhaps you'd be kind enough to show me what you've got available. I'd like to see the breeding stock, then the ones in training, then the gene maps.
Slangsby twinkled at her, but she distrusted that twinkle. Marcia and Poots said nothing and simply led her out into the aisle of the great barn. Cecilia looked up. Marcia's pig-headedness about Buccinator aside, she had excellent judgment elsewhere, and this barn proved it. Down the long aisle, one sleek head after another looking over the stall doors. The horses were under roof in the daytime to avoid the assaults of local insect-like parasites, who lived lives too short to learn that horse blood wouldn't nourish them. The bites, otherwise harmless, were painful and made horses nervous.
The oldest live-bred singularity daughter.
Cecilia had seen the mare before. Star, Crooked Stripe, Snip, all against a background of seal brown. Common coloring for singularity offspring because Marcia, like too many people, had a fancy for color.
Lovely.
She was, too, a good solid mare who had produced both ova and live foals.
I'm surprised you're still using her to produce live. Isn't it a bit risky at her age?
I keep telling you genetic wizard types that if you breed live, you get real soundness, long-term soundness. Of course, we've stripped her ova a few times because it's so hard to transport the mature horses, but the proof of the value of live breeding is right there. An 18-year-old mare who can withstand pregnancy and deliver a live foal.
Cecilia kept her face straight with an effort. Given the right pelvic conformation and good legs, any mare could do that. And any mare could get in trouble in any foaling, too. She moved to the next stall and the next. Marcia's idea of perfect conformation hadn't changed since her last visit. Sound, yes, but sacrificing elegance for it. They all looked a bit stubby to her, heavier in the neck and chunkier in the body than necessary. They passed under the dome at the crossing of the aisles and were now in the stallion end of the barn.
And this is our pride.
Marcia's pride was, of course, the closest thing to singularity she had been able to produce. He certainly looked like his famous grandsire. Dark brown, with the merest whisker of white on his brow, a powerful, well-muscled body, and the arrogance of any stallion who comes first in the barn hierarchy.
Very much like...
He's double-line bred.
What's his outcross line?
Cecilia thought she could guess.
Consequential.
Cecilia congratulated herself. Consequential had passed a curious whorl on the neck to his progeny, and this stallion had it. And trust Marcia to talk about the stallion side of the outcross line?
He's a real bargain.
At the price per straw of frozen semen that Marcia was asking, Cecilia didn't think he was a bargain at all. Not for an inbred chunk with all his grandsire's faults and probably few of his virtues.
What's his speed?
Not to her surprise, Marcia's smile vanished again.
He's far too valuable to risk on the track, Cecilia. His breeding alone, his conformation, show his quality. We wouldn't take the chance of injury.
Of proving him racing sound, of proving that his grandsire's unlikely speed and agility had come through along with a pretty brown coat and a thick neck. Cecilia couldn't tell for sure, but even from this angle, she suspected that his hocks were not sufficient for his build.
What's your price for singularity straws? They must be getting rare now.
Well, they are, of course. And we must reserve a certain supply for our own program. But I could let you have 50 straws for 40,000 each, of course.
As if they didn't already have all that influence they needed. Cecilia bit back the nonsense that wanted to burst out. That was only the asking price, which no one dealing in horses ever paid unless they were novices, in which case it was the price of their education.
Hmm.
She wasn't stupid enough to take the asking price, but might bargain later.
So, you see what a bargain this one is. 62% singularity.
Cecilia had run into this before, the ardent preserver of ancient breeds convinced that concentrating bloodlines would somehow overcome the limitations of time and restore the glories of Terran genetics.
Perhaps I could see this fellow moving a bit?
Of course. Slangsby, put him in the front ring.
Cecilia stepped back to watch. Disposition mattered, as far as she was concerned. Slangsby clipped a lead to the stallion's halter before he opened the stall door, and ran the chain over the nose and back through the mouth.
So, not a quiet one.
With that restraint, however, the dark horse stepped demurely from his stall with an air of innocence that Cecilia didn't believe for a moment. He did not dance, which might have been considered unmannerly, but he walked as if on eggs, as if any moment he might dance. Cecilia hung back. She wanted to see those hocks close up.
He can be a bit fresh when he's been in the stall this long.
Cecilia ignored this. She was farther back than the longest-legged horse could strike. She watched the hocks closely. The stallion swaggered a bit, a slight sideways jut of the hock as the weight came over it. From footfall to foot lift, the hock described a crooked circle as weight came onto that leg, and the leg pushed the weight forward. She had seen, had even owned, lanky horses whose hocks moved like that, and they'd been sound. But the chunky, muscly horses, those were the ones to watch. Those were the ones who needed rock-solid hocks. She knew she wouldn't buy a straw of this one's semen. She might as well tell Marcia now. But that wasn't how the game was played. She strolled on and took one of the comfortable padded seats just outside the display ring. Slangsby unlooped the chain and clipped on a long line instead of the short lead. The stallion moved out on the line, circled Slangsby at a mincing trot, and exploded suddenly in a flurry of hooves and tail, storming around in a gallop, then flinging himself in the air, bucking. Slangsby snapped the lead, and he quieted to a tight canter, then to a trot, slightly more relaxed than before.
So athletic. So balanced.
Cecilia watched the hind legs swing forward, back, never quite reaching under as far as she liked. She began to think what it would cost to fiddle the singularity sperm along. She'd need top equine gene sculptors, and the best were in the Guerny Republic, where a healthy racing industry supported them. It might be simpler to go there in the first place and not bother with Marcia's over-muscled stock, but the Guernesi concentrated on lighter-boned flat racers. The rest of the afternoon, as she watched one horse after another, half her mind was wandering off to Rotterdam and the Guerny Republic. That brought up the last discussion she'd had with her doctors.
You are physically a young woman again. Your body is in peak condition. But rejuvenation doesn't make your mind forget all it's learned. You are not in your early 30s. You are, in your experience, between 80 and 90. You will find you want to use your new body in ways that satisfy your mature mind.
She had not imagined what that might mean. What was she to do with the abundant energy that now made her restless? The Huerin trials had shown that she could be competitive. She was sure she could regain the championship. She had swum easily against the strongest current the yacht's pool provided, refreshed and not tired by an hour's swim. Pater's revelations of a rejuvenant click didn't attract her, except when younger people were being especially tiresome. But they were more tiresome now than when her aging body had left her with less energy to express her irritation. She considered her family. Would young Ronnie have been so feckless if his parents had not been rejuvenants? Parents who knew they would live forever didn't want competition from their children. Might be glad if the children were too immature at 20 or even 30 to be given responsibility. Were the rejuvenants heading for a society in which the young would have no opportunity to develop mature judgment? The youngsters had done well enough when they had to. When they had the chance, like Brunn, to demonstrate the maturity they should have.
Would you like to try out some of his git?
Cecilia yanked herself back to the present, where the chestnut stallion posed in the ring, showing off his muscles. The Singularity line, whatever its structural faults, had never been short of showy personality. Would she like to ride one? She thought of Marcia's past and her past and the way she always felt on a horse. No contest. It was never any contest. She always wanted to ride a live horse, even a bad horse. An hour later, Cecilia felt that even the Singularity line had its virtues. Cecilia dismounted at last, feeling almost smug. She had seen, in the look on Slangsby's face, that he had not expected her to be that good. And Marcia, who had surely rejuved more than once, must not have expected it either. They both looked slightly stunned. It might be worth it to have one just for fun, just for herself. Not to breed. She still didn't like the structure. But to ride. An embryo transfer to Rotterdam, brought out of one of the big old mares Meredith kept for that purpose. In a few years, she could play with it. Hard to believe she had those years now, could look that far ahead. It did change the decision points.
Let's talk about this, Marcia.
She was very glad she'd taken care to see her bankers before coming out here. Marcia had made everyone on the circuit uncomfortable about money years ago, and that sort of stinginess didn't change.
Excuse me, Commander, but Captain Serrano asked if she could come aboard. She'd like to speak to you personally.
It was past half, in the second shift, a time when attention blurred toward dinner. A time when, according to Kutsudis and his instruments, Garavay gathered with his conspirators for a daily conference. The guard at the access, crisply efficient in his spotless uniform, watched Harris and the others closely as he spoke into the intercom. Harris tried not to hold her breath visibly. He must want her to come. It would make things so much easier for him. A Serrano with an armed yacht was the only menace he faced. If the mouse walked into the cat's parlor, it saved the trouble of hunting it down. He had to be smart enough to figure that out.
Oh, very well. Yes. Yes, do bring her aboard. Any of her crew that came along. Delighted.
Delighted.
Harris let no hint of her own delight at setting foot on a cruiser deck again slip past her guard. She was the renegade, the outcast who hadn't dared to come back in the fleet. She was a coward who hadn't yet admitted it. She let herself shiver as Garavay's security patted her down, as if it bothered her. None of her weapons would show. Behind her, her crew submitted as well. She had worried some about Meharry, who had been a bit too eager to come along, but Meharry said nothing untoward. They were all in obvious civilian ship suits with Cecilia's family name stenciled, a few hours before, on the chest. Harris had not known how Garavay would react to this many crew. She had alternate plans for different possibilities, but they were led to his office in a clump.
Ah! Captain! Or may I call you Harris?
Garavay eyed her up and down with the clear intent of discovering any lingering scrap of backbone. As she had hoped, he had not dismissed the other officers. She had suspected he would prefer to humiliate her before an audience. Harris drooped as submissively as she could. She scarcely glanced at the other officers in the compartment. They would all have been junior to her if she were still in. They were all junior to Garavay, and they were all conspirators. She hoped Kutsudis was right about that. She had enough innocent blood on her conscience.
You're the Commodore.
Right, I am. You know, I really wish you had left here with your rich lady, your owner. Might have to confiscate that ship if there's an emergency.
I know. She just wouldn't listen. She doesn't understand things. She doesn't believe it can happen to her.
Kutsudis had assured her that Garavay could not have intercepted the messages between her and Cecilia, supposedly discussing that possibility. She hoped not, because all the messages had been fakes. Cecilia had gone blissfully into that horse farm and had yet to emerge. The safest place she could be right now.
I suppose you'd install your own crew?
Do you want the job?
Harris shook her head, looking down as if ashamed. She was afraid she couldn't control the expression in her eyes.
No, I... You know, I... had the chance to go back in fleet.
And got out while the going was good, huh? Well, probably wise. And your crew, ex-fleet as well. I don't suppose any of them would want a berth on a real fighting ship again.
No, sir.
Shut up. Don't ruin this.
I got more than enough scars, sir.
I hope we won't have to impress you, then. If there is trouble, and we run short of whatever your specialty was...
He waited, but Meharry didn't enlighten him. Harris stared at the carpet, waiting, feeling the others at her back.
Don't look so worried, Harris. I'm not planning to run off with your owner's ship and your crew unless I have to. You'll never have to fight another battle. Now, what was it you wanted to talk to me about?
Well, Commodore, it's partly my owner and partly the local government. You see, before you arrived, they kind of got to asking me things.
Sir, an urgent signal.
There it was, the prearranged distractor, one of Kutsudis's elegant fakeries. A bauble on the ship's scans that might be incoming ships, something the bridge crew would have to report and Garavay would have to acknowledge. Garavay turned away, reaching for his desk controls. His officers, for that instant, looked where he looked. No one needed a signal. Harris threw herself forward and sideways in a roll and kick combination that caught Garavay on the angle of the jaw. Before he could recover, she was on him, the edge of her hand smashing his larynx. Her other hand had reached the comm button, preventing its automatic alarm at the sudden loss of contact. Garavay thrashed against his desk and fell to the deck. She looked up to meet four triumphant grins. Too early for those, they had just started. She leaned over and removed Garavay's earplug, inserting it in her own ear. She listened, only half hearing what she already knew, but aware of a little bubble of delight at being once more connected to a real ship's command center. Even if it wasn't her ship. Though it was, or would be, if the rest of this worked. Already the others were stripping the bodies of their uniforms. Oblo looked up and waved something, a data strip it looked like. Harris leaned again to Garavay, now unconscious, his body twitching with oxygen deprivation, and unpinned his insignia. Her nose wrinkled involuntarily at the unpleasant stench. She ignored the source and pinned the insignia to her own uniform. Thank goodness she had a uniform that could pass for fleet in a pinch, because this was a pinch indeed. Petrus held up the uniform he'd removed from someone with Major's rings.
I can wear this.
No, it won't really convince them, and once they discover where the uniforms came from, they'll worry again. I'm the key. If they accept me, they'll accept you.
Otherwise, of course, they were all dead. In her ear, the flow of information stopped. She hit the comm button twice, the usual signal of a busy captain that the message had been received. From Garavay's inside pocket, no more twitches now, Harris took the thin wand that gave access to captain's command switches. From here out, it would get more dangerous. The wand slid into the desk slot easily. The hard part came next. The use of the captain's wand triggered a demand for an identity check.
Identify yourself.
Serrano, Harris.
Harris added her identification numbers and rank, mentally crossing more fingers than she owned. If Kutsudis was right, her Aunt Admiral might have managed to leave a back door in the fleet database. Lights flared on the captain's desk.
Why is Serrano, Harris, Commander, using Garavay, Deccan, Sostratos, Commander's wand?
Emergency. On the orders of Admiral Vita Serrano.
Authorization number.
A sticky one. The only number her aunt had shared with her recently was the Serrano encryption code on that data cube. Would Aunt Admiral have risked putting her family code into the database, hiding it in plain sight, as it were? Right now, Harris believed her Aunt Admiral might have done anything. She found another mental finger to cross and gave that number. After the second group, the computer blinked all the lights.
Authorization accepted.
So, Aunt Admiral had had more in mind than an apology, had she? And had she known Harris would be in this sort of trouble? Kutsudis' remark about lightning rods flashed through her mind. Interesting. Infuriating. But she had no time to sort it out. Now, a touch on the desk opened the service functions. She picked up the command headset and settled it on her hair.
You don't want the combat helmet?
No. If we can do this at all, we can do it this way. We cannot take the whole ship by force if everyone's turned.
She could, with the command wand, destroy it and everyone on it. and in the process, the station to which they were docked. But she hoped very much that her string of good guesses would continue to hold.
They need to see my face. I'm legitimate, remember? The computer accepts me. My aunt is an admiral.
On the desk, she keyed up the status displays. Personnel. There were 15 more known traitors on this ship, and 4 on one of the patrol craft. Kutsudas thought he knew which 15, and she located them. On duty, 6, 1 on the bridge, and 5 elsewhere about the ship.
You can't take the bridge alone.
No, but I can isolate the compartments.
She touched the control panels. Now, each was blocked from communication with the others, and if she could get control of the bridge crew, if they believed her, there was a chance of capturing the other traitors without a major fight in the ship. The first thing was to establish her authority with even one legitimate onboard officer. Now on the bridge was a major Kutsudas thought unlikely to be a traitor. Again, he had better be right. She selected his personal comm code from the officer's list.
Major Svatek, report to the captain's office.
Yes, sir.
He had a voice that gave nothing away. She felt no intuitive nudge of like or dislike. Harris nodded to her crew. They placed themselves on either side of the door and waited. The major came in without really looking, and by the time he had registered the bodies on the floor and the stranger behind the captain's desk, Petrus and Mahari had him covered. He looked stunned and then angry, but not particularly frightened.
Sorry about this, Major. It is necessary that you listen to what I have to say, and there was no safe way to do this on the bridge without imperiling the ship.
Who are you?
I'm Commander Harris Serrano. I'm on special assignment.
He was not an officer she had ever seen before, but he had to know that name. The Major's eyes shifted from her to Petrus, to the bodies, and back to her. For once, Harris didn't mind having the family face.
But you were... I heard...
You heard correctly. I resigned my commission and took employment as a civilian in anticipation of recent crises.
The blank look cleared slowly.
Oh. You mean it was all faked?
Well, not uncovering Lupescu's plot. That wasn't faked at all.
Everyone knew about Lupescu, she was sure.
But what are you doing here?
This time, his glance at the bodies had been longer. His first anger was leaving him, and she saw a twitch of fear, quickly controlled.
Right now, I'm taking command of this ship, as ordered.
The Major's gears were trying to mesh, but achieved only useless spinning. Harris could almost hear the loose rattle.
As ordered?
You're aware that this system will shortly be under attack by the benignity of the Compassionate Hand?
Giving it the full title added weight, Harris thought, to the claim.
No, Captain.
The Major didn't know it yet, perhaps, but he had accepted Harris in command.
They scouted it, sent a fake raider in order to check out the defenses.
That raider we heard about?
Yes, with a surveillance ship in the distance. This group was then dispatched, but not by the RSS command.
But what are you saying?
That your former captain, Deccan Garavay, was a traitor in the pay of the Benignity. That certain of his officers were also traitors. That the purpose of this mission was to strip Xavier of any defenses, including me, since I had killed the raider, and open it to the Benignity.
Disbelief and avid curiosity warred in the Major's expression.
But how do you...
You may recall that I have an Aunt Vida. Admiral Vida, that is.
Comprehension swept across the Major's face, and he sagged. An Aunt Admiral, a secret mission. It was all right. Behind the Major, Petrus relaxed a fraction. Harris didn't.
No. My people need uniforms. They've had to wear those miserable civilian things too long.
Harris wondered if she dared promote her associates to officers. She needed all the loyal officers she could find. But instinct said that even the smallest additional lie could topple the Major's fragile belief in her story. If he stopped to think, if he doubted, she would become a common murderer again, not a legitimate officer who had been operating undercover. She gave them their original ranks instead, and watched the Major's response. He might not know it, but he could still be dead any moment.
And you'll need to get someone up to tape the scene for forensics, put the bodies on ice, and clean up this office afterwards. We strongly suspect that one or more are carrying discrete CHID markings, and the following personnel must be located and put under guard.
She handed him Kutsudas' list. Making it all up as she went along, she realized, was a lot more fun.
Yes, sir. Anything else, sir?
No. I'll be on the bridge speaking to the crew.
But you've got Sidon on your list, and she's on the bridge now.
Thank you. Then I'll take Mr. Vasisuan with me.
Oblo was almost as well known in the fleet as Kutsudas.
Who's bridge officer at this time?
Lieutenant Milsini.
And the MP watch commander?
Lieutenant Janice.
Svatek looked at Arkady Janice, startled.
That's probably my Uncle Slava's oldest boy. I'd heard he'd been commissioned.
Another thin layer added to the skin of belief. Harris could see Svatek processing this. Not only the famous Serrano name, but someone related to the ship's own security personnel.
Mr. Janice, you'll accompany me as well. Let's go.
The corridors of Garavay's ship, no, her ship, were as familiar as the shapes of her own fingers. Command deck, dockside corridor, aft of the captain's office. A passing ensign saluted her insignia without appearing to notice anything. His eyes widened at her escort. She wished they'd been able to wait for uniforms, but the scanty tradition behind her acts emphasized the need for immediate action. Ahead, the hatch leading to the bridge, just where she'd left it, as if she had walked back onto her own ship. A marine pivot stood at ease by the hatch, snapping to attention at the sight of her insignia.
Sir!
Then his expression wavered as if he weren't sure. She snapped a salute.
Pivot. These personnel are with me.
Before he reacted, they were past. She came through into her own kingdom, home at last. She took the three steps forward, paused while the bridge officer caught sight of her.
Sir, Commander?
Commander Harris Serrano, special assignment. As I've explained to Major Svatek, I have taken command of this vessel. You are Lieutenant Milsini, is that correct?
Harris was aware of heads turning, the pressure of many startled looks. One of the officers on the bridge was Sidon. Harris didn't worry about that. Janice and Oblo would be watching for her. More important now was the reaction of the loyal crew. So far, astonishment held them.
Captain Garavay?
Harris held up the command wand.
Captain Garavay has been relieved. The computer has accepted my authorization code.
Liar!
There. Lieutenant Sidon, a rangy redhead who reminded her inexorably of Cecilia.
She's a traitor! Don't listen to her! She was cashiered! She's not fleet!
Heads turned back and forth, uneasy. Lieutenant Milsini started to reach out, but froze in a parody of indecision when Harris looked at him.
Lieutenant Sidon, you are hereby charged with treason. Evidence in possession of fleet shows that you conspired with Commander Garavay and others to yield Xavier to the benignity of the Compassionate Hand.
Kutsudas, after all, was legitimately fleet, even if presently on a yacht.
What?
Recordings of conversations with Commander Garavay. You are hereby relieved of your duties and will be held in confinement until such time as a board can be convened.
The familiar phrases rolled out of her mouth as if she herself had never felt their impact on her own life. Necessary, Harris knew. Such formality, such familiarity with tradition, was another proof of her own legitimacy.
Mr. Janice? Mr. Vasisuan?
Harris nodded, and they moved around her. Lieutenant Sidon looked around for support she did not get.
No! I'm not a traitor, she is! Ask her what happened to our captain! It's all lies! Look at her! That's not a fleet uniform! Those men! They're in civvy ship suits!
I know her.
Harris looked for the voice and found a face she vaguely remembered from several ships back. Her mental name file revolved. Salverson. A pleasant-faced brunette that Harris remembered best for a difficult emergency repair during combat.
Petty Light Salverson. But you've had a promotion. Congratulations, Chief.
I never believed you'd been thrown out. So it was all special ops?
I'm not at liberty to say.
Salverson grinned, and those nearest her, people she would have known well, grinned too.
You fools! She'll get you killed, all of you!
Then, with a glance at Janice and Oblo, who were almost to her side, she gave Harris a final, furious glare.
You won't win. You can't. Even if you get the ship.
And she slumped where she stood. Those nearest tried to catch her, but failed. Harris felt a chill pang she had not felt when she killed Garavay. Sidon seemed so young. She could have outlived her mistakes if she'd wanted to. She had no time for more regrets. She turned to Lieutenant Milsini.
We'll need an autopsy. Until all my people are back in uniform, we'd better have someone else convey the body to sickbay.
Yes, Captain.
Harris left him to arrange it. She had more pressing duties. She moved to the command desk.
I have the bridge. Let me explain the situation briefly. I expect communications from the Admiralty and possible hostile action from the Benignity. This action may be imminent. Unless we find details in Commander Garavay's private notes, we must assume that it could come at any time.
They were attentive now rather than confused. Confront a fighting vessel with an enemy, and confusion yielded to training. She had counted on that reaction.
Officers not involved in the treasonous plot to yield Xavier will be briefed as soon as the ships are secure. In the meantime, all scans will be fully manned all shifts. Record in battle code from this hour.
The scan positions, after a last glance at her, erupted in a brief flurry of activity. Garavay had had them shut down, probably to prevent the operators from noticing when the Compassionate Hand ships arrived.
Captain?
Yes?
Lieutenant Janice, Watch Commander. I've just been advised by Major Svatek to take persons into custody, and among them a Lieutenant Seiden, who was on the bridge.
Was on the bridge. She killed herself rather than accept arrest.
I see. May I ask the Captain's authorization for actions taken in relieving Commander Garavay of his duties?
Admiral Serrano, it was a special assignment.
So I gathered. Sir, does the Captain have other orders?
Secure the ship. No station liberty, no leaves, no off-ship communications without my express orders. That list is almost certainly incomplete and will be in combat shortly.
Yes, sir. Those personnel on the list have been secured under guard. Although we can't maintain a suicide watch with all of them separately confined and do the rest of it. Would the Captain clarify the priorities?
Ship first, of course. If they kill themselves, it's regrettable. The other could be fatal.
He shouldn't need to be told that, but she realized he was still feeling his way, not quite sure she was trustworthy.
Major Svatek said a relative of mine was with you. Would that be Vladdy?
Despite the casual tone, Harris knew this was a trick question. She had never heard of a Vladdy, Janice.
Arkady. Would you like to speak with him?
No, just checking. Sorry, sir, it's my...
job, I know. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have other duties myself.
Harris unlocked the in-ship communications and keyed for an all-stations announcement. If there were other traitors, or even high-strung overreactors, this would flush them out.
Attention, all personnel. This is Commander Harris Sr. Serrano, now acting captain of this vessel. We are in a state of emergency, expecting the arrival of a hostile force from the Benignity. Your executive officer, Major Svatek, has been informed of the nature of the emergency and of the reasons for a change of command. Those of you who have served with me before know that I will give full explanations when there's time.
A calculated risk, but surely there were others who had been with her before, who would explain to their anxious fellows what kind of Commander Harris was.
Some of you will have heard that I resigned my commission and am no longer a fleet officer. In fact, I was on special assignment and my authorization code is still active as the ship's computer recognized. This is an unusual situation. I understand that many of you will be confused, but at the moment we have more pressing problems. The Benignity wants this system as a base for invasion. We're going to defend it.
From the expressions of the bridge crew, relief outweighed anxiety. Garavay could not have been the sort of commander who inspired confidence.
I want division heads in my office in 1 hour. I noticed some discrepancies in the status lists that we'll have to address in order to complete our mission. In the meantime, I'll expect you all to bring all systems to readiness. Captain out.
Harris grinned at Lieutenant Milsini.
I'll post the hard copy of my orders when I get them from Sweet Delight. Considering the secrecy, I couldn't bring them aboard with me at first.
Certain phrases from the cube her aunt had sent her could, with the proper surrounding verbiage, be taken as orders. Oblo had produced a surprisingly realistic document.
Yes, sir. You'll be taking over the captain's quarters?
Of course.
Implicit in that was her transfer to the Vigilance as her primary vessel. The Sweet Delight was no longer hers in the same way. And who would captain the yacht? She might need it in the fight. No, first the very dangerous patrol ships. She had the cruiser, maybe. If they captured the other traitors aboard before they could arrange a mutiny. If the other two craft didn't try to blow the cruiser.
Who's our communications first, Lieutenant Milsini?
Lieutenant Granith, sir.
Have Lieutenant Granith hail the Sweet Delight, Civilian Band 4, and route the response to my set.
Sir.
Sweet Delight, Navigator First Sirkin.
Sirkin, it's Captain Serrano. I've taken over here. How's the long scan look?
Captain, there's something far out our scan tech says. Very faint, just a ripple.
I'm having communications here. Hold an open line. If there's a change, let me know.
What she said and did not say fit the prearranged code. Kutsudis would remove the block he'd put on communications out of the cruiser. Now for the patrol ships. Paradox's captain had died with Garavay in the captain's cabin. Paradox's executive officer might or might not be loyal. He had not shown up on any of Kutsudis's scans, but he had been with the traitor captain for 2 years. The captain of the more distant ship, Despite, was definitely disloyal. Kutsudis had recorded her during a conference aboard the cruiser. Harris expected that the crews of both ships were predominantly loyal. If the exec of Paradox accepted her, that left only Despite. Would that captain betray herself? The patrol craft could be lethal, especially if any distractions arose on the cruiser.
Major Tinsey, I am Commander Harris Serrano, acting captain of the Vigilance. You are hereby confirmed as acting captain of the patrol craft Paradox.
The face on screen matched the database holo of Major Tinsey.
What? What's... Where's Captain Ardos? Who are you?
Commander Serrano. Harris Serrano. I've been on special assignment for the Admiralty investigating irregularities.
Such a handy word, irregularities. She was a little shocked at how easily the lie now rolled off her tongue.
But you're not... Where's Commodore Garavay? What's going on over there?
Commander Garavay has been relieved of his command. I'm sorry to say that he and your Captain Ardos were involved in these irregularities.
Harris held up a packet within pickup range.
We have recordings implicating both of them and some other officers. We assume that officers not implicated are innocent, and that includes yourself, although the investigation will continue. May I take it that you are not in the pay of the Benignity?
Of course I'm not. What? The Benignity? Captain Ardos?
Captain Ardos, Harris reflected, must have been relieved to have so dense an executive officer. No wonder he had kept the man around for 2 years, even though he couldn't confide in him. No better camouflage than honest stupidity, ready to swear he had seen, heard, and suspected nothing. Harris waved the packet.
Apparently, several officers on each ship were involved. I suggest you take immediate steps to secure your position in case there are more traitors aboard. We expect hostile forces in this system shortly. You will prepare your ship for combat, Captain Tinsey. Or if you feel yourself unequal to command, I can relieve you and assign another officer.
Tinsey stiffened as if she'd filled his spinal column with a steel rod.
No, sir. Commander. Commodore.
Commander will do. Now, I have a list of possible traitors aboard Paradox. These are not confirmed, but you might want to take precautions.
She transmitted the names in a burst of code.
You will maintain a shielded link to Vigilance while I make contact with Despite.
Captain, Despite's moving. Pretty good Delta V, outbound toward the border.
At least it wasn't an attack on the station or her ships.
Weapons, bring us to readiness.
Sir.
Paradox, you are authorized to bring your weapons to full readiness.
What was Despite doing out there? Not simply running away. That would be too easy. Going to feint a retreat and then come back? Going to meet someone? And had she any chance to stop them?